This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. I hope that I have inspired some of you to start writing or to keep writing. Life is full of wonders. Some people start thinking about writing when they are kids, and others, perhaps you, start when you're older. The important thing is to try, and when you are ready, you will need my guests, an agent and a lawyer. My first guest is Lane Zachary, one of the top literary agents. And in the studio, I have David Ellis, an intellectual property lawyer. Have you a question for him? If so, call in. The number is 727-441-3000 or toll free 1-866-826-1340. Now, for my first guest, I want to play a special song for her.
Sincerely yours, all my life, sincerely yours. Night and day, I'll pray you're mine, spring or fall.
Lane Zachary is the founder of one of the premier literary agencies, Zachary, Schuster, and Harmsworth, who represent over 300 authors. Hi, Lane. Are you there?
Hi.
Thanks for joining me. Where are you? Are you in Boston or New York?
Well, today I'm in Boston. Tomorrow I'll be in New York, but it's a lovely day here in Boston.
Well, that's good. You need good weather. You had a rough winter.
We had a rough winter, and we were very happy in that it's become very warm here, and everything is in bloom, and it looks gorgeous.
Well, you know, here in Florida, I hate to rub it in, but we almost always have great weather, so.
I envy you. I really envy you.
Listen.
This winter when we had, you know, I don't know how many feet of snow, I just yearned for escape to Florida.
Well, next year you have to do that. You have to come down and see me.
I will.
You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in northern Michigan, and of course we had snow days half of the year, but it was the one nice thing about it was I read a lot, so that's how I got into all this writing business. I have in the studio with me today another guest, Dave Ellis. He's an entertainment lawyer, and later on he's going to answer some of my listeners' questions. But as you know, in the totem pole of the life of a writer, the agent and the lawyer play important parts. And, of course, as the agent, you are on the top. It must be very exciting for you to find a new writer and to know what a difference you can make in his or her life.
Well, that is just so true. I mean, I've been an agent for 25 years now, and when I still stand up and say hallelujah when I find a writer who really knows how to use the English language beautifully as well as tell a good story. You know, so many writers think that agents are hard-nosed, but we are just always on the lookout for a good storyteller and a good writer.
Well, you know, really, no, everyone... Every writer should think of an agent, well, as a god or goddess. And sometimes when I see writer, you know, agents at writers' conferences, I get this urge to throw rose petals at your feet. You know, but I think that's how important an agent is to a writer. I don't know if anyone throws rose petals at your feet yet, but I know that you're well known and. For all of the great work you've done, especially, and I love this, the story of your auctioning a book and the great story about the New York City blackout of 2003 and your auction. Tell us
how
you...
Oh, my goodness. How did you know about that?
Well, you know, it goes around in the writer's circle. We hear about, well, everybody would love to have the book auctioned, right? I mean, this.
Yes.
I don't know. How often does that happen, actually, where you have a book to auction?
Well, I mean, this is how it works, so that I could let your writers in on the process. When we work with a writer that we think can really have a career in publishing, we usually work with them, you know, for many, many months on their proposal or novel or whatever it is they're writing. And once we feel it is good enough to go out to editors, we usually send it out to somewhere between a dozen and 18 editors in the hopes of getting more than one editor interested and then having an auction. And the auction that you speak about, that occurred in my early years. And would you like me to talk about that?
Oh, yes, I do, because I love the writer involved, the author involved, Livanya Sankaran.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I love the book. I love The Hope Factory. And, of course, it was for the, I think it was the short stories, right, that you had the auction.
Yes, The Red Carpet.
Tell us about what happened there.
Okay, well, it's really a very exciting story, you know, once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing. I met Lavanya at a writer's conference, fell in love with her short stories, and worked with her for quite a while on them. And then we sent them out to everybody in New York, all the top editors, and everybody wanted to buy this collection. So I took Lavanya around, this is what you do, to all the editors that were interested in her book, and then the day after, I begin an auction. So the auction was going fast. The way it works is, you know, you go from the small, you go from the high, you get bids in, and you go back to the smallest bidder, and you tell him that the highest bidder is XYZ, do you want to top it? And it's rather grueling because, you know, it happens one at a time. You have to call each one as before, after the previous one goes up in price. So this was going on for days. And Lavanya wanted to watch the whole process. She lives in India, so she came over to watch. She was in my office. When all of a sudden, I was on the phone with an editor, and we lost our connection, and this was happening in New York, and our office is on the top floor of a building in the middle of Manhattan, and we very, very slowly watched the lights go out one by one in all the different buildings, and we heard the air conditioner shut down and the elevator shut down. It was a total blackout. And so I had to end the auction, and we were caught in the city. We had nowhere to go. The trains weren't running. So many of us lived in Brooklyn at the time, so we ended up staying at Lavanya's hotel room, myself and my assistant, without the heat, the windows wide open. The restaurants had flown open their doors because their food was going bad, so there was free food and beer on the street. It was quite an amazing thing. But getting back to the auction, early the next morning, I couldn't sleep. I saw the lights slowly go on, and, you know, I was just so grateful. So the trains were not yet running, so I walked to my office, and I walked into my office, and the phone rang. And this publisher, who was on vacation, you know, somewhere far away, you know, far from the blackout, called and said, "Is the auction still going on?" And I said, "Are you kidding? New York is in a blackout." He was, you know, somewhere, I think, in North Carolina with his family. So, you know, I had to, the auction, you know, was still over, but finally when the lights went on the next day and the city was back to normal, we continued it. And it went on for days, you know, and I happened to get a two-book deal for Lavanya.
And a six-figure advance, right?
A six-figure advance.
Wow.
With a very big publisher. She was very, very happy. You know, both of her books, you know, came out, and she's now working on a third novel, which I hope to sell in another auction when it's ready.
Well, I love the Hope Factory. It's like a upstairs, downstairs set in India, and I think it's a great book. And I hope that when she gets to town next time, you let me know and she can come on the program, because I find her so interesting.
She would love that. She would absolutely love that.
And that's an example of, you know, an investment banker who becomes a writer, and she really tells a great story. You know, one of the reasons I started Joy on Paper was to give writers an insight into, you know, what it takes to find an agent. And let's talk a little bit. I want to talk about fiction, but let's talk a little bit about nonfiction, because things have changed so much in the marketplace. And well, in the old days, like that's like 4 or 5 years ago, I believe all that was that to do a nonfiction book, you needed to present a detailed proposal. How is it today? What's the market like for nonfiction writers?
Well, I think it's still a detailed proposal, unless you're a celebrity. Otherwise, let's say you're writing about history or whatever, or something in current events, or a how-to book, you usually need to write. There are three parts to a good book proposal. There is an overview, which runs about anywhere from 7 to 15 pages, which gives an editor a full sense of your book, what it will cover, why people will buy it, what are its main characters, what are its main themes. After that, we have what we call chapter summaries. They could be as short as a paragraph, as long as 2 pages, and they give a little bit more detail about what will go inside each chapter. And this is to give an editor the sense that you can fill up a 250-page book, that your book has an arc, a beginning, middle, and end. And then generally there's a chapter sample. Is that what, have you found that that has changed? Is that why you're asking?
Well, I had heard that some agents were asking for the whole book now.
Oh, now that's true. That's true. For a novel, you have to have the whole
novel. Oh, yeah. No, I know for a novel, you've always had to have the whole book. Well,
I have found that you don't necessarily need the whole book still. So that has not been my experience, but that might be a new trend.
Yeah,
could be a new trend.
Things are changing quickly. Now, you know,
I do know that, you know, they like more than one chapter. Sometimes they would like to see 150 pages of the actual book. Because publishing houses have downsized, they are much more cautious, and they don't want to take too many risks. So it wouldn't surprise me that they want more of the book written, because they want to see that you could do it. So many publishing houses have lost money on that shorter book proposal when the author really didn't know how to deliver the whole book.
Well, because one of the problems in writing a really great nonfiction book is it takes a lot of research. And, you know, I'm thinking of, like, one of your clients, Hazel Rowley, who did
that. Oh, I love her.
Franklin and Eleanor, The Portrait of an Extraordinary Marriage, is fantastic. But I have a feeling she did a lot of research there. So, you know, do nonfiction writers get advances often, or is it still difficult?
Oh, they always get advances. Nobody wants to write a book without, you know, some money involved. She did not write her entire book. She wrote a very long proposal, but she had written 2 other books before, and so she had already proven herself. You know, if it's a new writer that has not proven himself in the market, you know, we don't know if he could finish a book. We don't know if his research will come together into this magnificent story. You know, that's more of a risk, and he will have to provide, you know, more work in the beginning in order to sell his book.
Well, that's what I'll tell all of the nonfiction writers that I've been talking to lately, because there are some really great stories out there, and, you know, writers are trying to keep their day jobs and still spend a great deal of time on getting this research done.
It's so difficult. It's so difficult. You know, my heart goes out to people in that situation. But you do not have to write the whole book. That has not been my experience.
Well, I think that.
But you have to write well, and you have to give an editor a sense that you know what you're doing, and that you have command over your story, and that you know the Americans will want to read it. A lot of times, I hope I'm not talking too much, Pat.
No, no.
I mean, you know, many times authors will send me their work cold over the email, and you know, it's not thought out. It's you know, they've just sat in front of their computer and written up what they want to write up. But so much more forethought has to be put into any kind of book project.
Absolutely. Now, let's go back just a little bit to the beginning of your career, because this is another fascinating story and another auction. It looks like you're really good at this auction business.
I was, yeah.
because this is a beautiful story, and I think the first really big book I ever read, I remember the day that my big sister, took me into McGregor Public Library in Detroit, and I checked out my first book, Little Women.
Right.
It was, even today, I remember that day. I remember the sunshine. I remember the smell of lilacs outside. It was a thrilling day for me to find Little Women. Now, so for you to come across an unknown Louisa May Alcott book must have been unbelievably thrilling.
Well, it was just absolutely thrilling, Patsy, and I love the way you described, you know, your first meeting up with Louisa May Alcott. What happened with me, I was a very young agent. I couldn't have been practicing more than 2 years, and from what I understand, the Alcott estate was in need in some cash, so there was a manuscript of Louisa May Alcott's in one of the attics that it was in her handwriting on yellow paper with crossouts, and I mean, it was phenomenal to see that. It was one of the highlights of my career. And it was a book that Louisa May Alcott had never sold in her lifetime, and so the family decided to sell it to a rare book dealer. And lo and behold, a humble school teacher / principal in New Hampshire bought it, and he brought it all over New York to see if an agent would take it on to get it published. And you know, this was, I think it was the 90s, people were very jaded and nobody wanted to take it on, and pardon me for saying this, he showed it mostly to male agents, and they all said, oh, no one reads Louisa May Alcott anymore, she's passé, nobody's going to be interested in this. They paved the way to me.
I think I would almost faint if I saw it's just too exciting to think about.
Yes, and so he brought it to me, and he took it out of the box.
Oh.
Like, I just about fainted. I mean, it was just on old yellow paper, and the school teacher had it transcribed, you know, into a computer, and we worked on it, and once again we sent it out to at least a dozen houses, and Random House did what's called a preempt. They stopped the auction and offered an amount that was so high to take it off the table so nobody else could bid on it. Oh. And we accepted that preempt, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's fantastic. Lane, I need to take a short break.
Sure.
But hold on, because I have a lot of questions for you. Meanwhile, anyone who has a question for David Ellis, our attorney, call 727-441-3000, and we'll be right back. This is WTAN 1340, Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio.
Hey. This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you looking for the perfect gift? Going to a wedding? A special birthday? The Silver Queen is the place to go. Graduations are coming up. Don't settle for the ordinary. At the Silver Queen, you will find a unique gift. Things that you won't find at the mall. From beautiful photo frames to silver and china, you will find just what you're looking for. One that says, you care. Guys, looking for that perfect ring? You'll find it at the Silver Queen. And don't forget their bridal registry. Located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo, the Silver Queen is the place to go. Visit their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. And when you go to the store, tell them that Patsy with a Z sent you.
Hi, this is Paul Molloy, host of Freedom Works, The Paul Molloy Show. Heard every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Please join us and our guests as we focus a libertarian spotlight on what's happening in our politics and culture. If you thought our Constitution and the Declaration of Independence really did stand for individual freedom, then you'll be coming to the right place. Again, that's Freedom Works, The Paul Molloy Show, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wikiwatchee Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show, at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wikiwatchee State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine spring at Buccaneer Bay. Wikiwatchee State Park is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wikiwatchee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wikiwatchee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
The City of Dunedin introduces baseball done our way. Start with a morning on our pristine beaches. Next, off to downtown for some unique shopping. Then a bit of lunch at one of our many award-winning restaurants. And now, time for an afternoon game at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. Finish the day off with a sunset cruise on the Gulf. A day in Dunedin. A day done our way. For more information, go to dunedingov.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and we're back with my guest, Lane Zachary, founder of Zachary, Schuster, and Harmsworth. I think not only is she a great agent, we should also call her the queen of book auctions.
You know, Patsy, I wanted to add one thing to what I just spoke about regarding auctions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, auctions are wonderful and they sound very glamorous, but I would like to let your audience know that you know...
It doesn't happen all the time.
It doesn't happen all the time, and the bottom line is just getting a book contract is like gold.
Yes.
So always remember that. You know, it just takes one to see the brilliance in your book, buy it, and do wonderful things with it.
Exactly. You know, I interviewed one of your authors, Doug Brunt, who wrote The Ghosts of Manhattan. And did you know that it was a very, very difficult interview for me?
Tell me why.
I mean, it was just terrible. I made the mistake of putting up his Facebook page.
Oh.
And so while I'm interviewing him, I'm looking at his Facebook page, and he's so cute, he's so adorable, that it was really hard for me to concentrate. And I think at several points during the interview, I was like giggling like a schoolgirl or something.
Oh, that is so funny.
I mean, really, I said, I can never do that again. Well, actually, I will do that again. So when he comes out with his next book, I told my husband, I said, you know, when Doug Brun comes out with his next book, I'm going to do a special 2-hour show just for him. But it's true. And I loved Ghosts of Manhattan. And I think, Doug is just a fantastic writer. And I was so pleased that I was able to interview him.
You know, I'll say this about Doug. He number one, he is absolutely gorgeous.
Yes.
And number two, it all, he is the kindest, sweetest, most humble guy, so that when you're working with him, his looks are not, he doesn't, they're not the major operative.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's sweet, and it's so adorable how sweet he is.
Yes, and it's real. It's all real.
And I love that. I love his character in Ghosts of Manhattan, Nick Farmer. And, you don't often get a character in a book that you really care about. And I think that shows the real talent that Doug has, that he made me really, I really wanted Nick Farmer to, come out all right at the end. So that was
right.
It was really exciting. Now, for fiction, I don't know if he had to do it. I think he'd already written his book. But for fiction, the query letter is always the gateway to getting an agent to read more. But have you ever gone beyond a query letter? I mean, have you ever said, okay, well, maybe this person is having a bad query letter day and just read the 10 pages anyway or whatever?
It's hard because we get so many in our inbox a day. So your query letter is so deeply important. Do you want me to talk about that or?
Yeah, I was going to say, writers, so many writers go to, we go to writer seminars and all of this. And so give us the...
Okay, well, first of all, if you do go to writer seminars or writers conferences, glom on to any agent there and try to make a connection. That's a big help. But in terms of the cover letter, I'll start with the subject line, which shows up in the email. Put something very smart in there. Don't say the name of your novel by Ted Williams, because that's like everything else we get. Say, like, I went to the Pacific Northwest Writing Seminar, or I got my master's here, or a journalism degree here. Lead with some strength so that an agent will even open the email and read the query letter. Now, so the query letter is very important, and it's not the time to be sugary or anything like that. What I would do is, the first paragraph, are we talking about fiction now?
Yes, fiction.
Okay, the first paragraph should be about your fiction. And then the second paragraph, I would take a pause and let us know any credits that you have received, because this really separates the men from the boys. If you have published anywhere, say it in the second paragraph. If you have studied with anyone, let us know right away. If you've attended any writing seminars or gone to graduate school in writing, anything that will show that you have had some professional experience and you're not just somebody writing us with out of the blue. So get us into your grip us in the first paragraph. Take a pause and let us know how great you are with your credentials, and then go back to writing about the novel.
Well, that's great advice, and everyone out there, listen to this advice. You didn't have to pay to go to the seminar, but it's very, very valuable advice. Last week my guest was Eloisa James, and she writes a historical romance, a great writer, and she mentioned that early in her career, she was rejected many, many times, but it's this is something a writer has to learn not to give up. Have you ever rejected a writer, and then later on that person's turned out to have a bestseller?
Well, I haven't had that, but all of us here have certainly rejected writers that other agents have taken on and sold for a lot of money. And yes, there is one bestseller that has slipped out of our reach. That's correct.
That happens.
So it does mean that every agent is different, so don't give up.
Are you going to be at any writers' conferences this year?
I didn't sign up for any this year, but I will be going in 2016. I'll go to Sewanee and a couple of others. I hear there's one in the Pacific Northwest that's supposed to be great, and Florida has great writing conferences.
Yes, we do.
Which one should I come to?
I don't know. I'll find out which one is good, and we'll have you down here. And then I can have you come into the studio, and we can talk a lot more about. You have so many great writers who are just on your side, and I'm not even talking about your partners yet. I know that Todd Schuster, of course, has a great list of authors that he works with, and he does a lot of the book to film kind of deals.
That's right, he does.
And so I'm hoping I'm going to try to get him on one day. And then I love Esmond Harmsworth. Does he still have a British accent?
Yes. Have you met him?
No. I heard him. I heard him speak somewhere once, and the reason I remember is because he has. I love British accents. I lived in England for quite a while, and I noticed when I was checking your page out that he says that he is looking hard for literary food writing. Now that's a special. Well, that's a very special genre, and I want to know what exactly is literary food writing. Does he want Does he need the recipes too, or just can I write about my grandmother, and then? Do I have to put her secret recipes in the book, too?
Well, I think it could include both. First, I'll say that Esmond is British, and he has the most darling accent.
I love British accents.
It's really wonderful to listen to him. Literary food writing. There are some people who do that. I think someone named Ruth Reich did that, who just write about food so beautifully and restaurants they go to, and then they do include recipes. But I'm not as fully familiar with that genre.
Well, you have to talk to Esmond, and I have to get him on here.
Oh, he'll really be delightful.
Oh, that's great.
His accent is great, and he's very funny.
Well, tell me, I know your whole life is centered around books, and I don't know if agents ever actually retire, because most people, when they retire so they can read books, but since that's all you do, I don't know what you'll do when you retire. What else do you do? Do you crochet? Do you knit? What else do you do for fun?
Well, you ask very, very good questions, Patsy.
Well, thank you.
Yes, I do read books, but sometimes I think I have to retire to read books because I literally spend 24/7 reading and editing. And so I just bought some books to read over the summer. And but we retire late. We're the type of people that retire late in life.
Exactly.
We retire early.
There's no sense in retiring when you can keep helping so many people like you do. Because really, the work you do, not just bringing the great giving life to writers, but you also, the writers are giving life to readers. So it's just a wonderful, it's more than a business. It's a calling. So.
Yes, and the writers give life to us because, they do great work. We see them improve. We develop, if you if you're working with a writer for 20 years, after a while, you know them as well as a good friend does. So it's very rewarding. And outside of this, I don't do as much as I used to do because the work is consuming. I see friends, I knit. And I try to go to museums, but friends are of second most importance.
Absolutely. Well, Lane, thank you so much for coming on Joy on Paper, and it's been a thrill to talk to you. And I will keep in contact and let you know when you should come down here.
Okay, and Patsy, feel free to call me anytime. You really sound like a wonderful person.
Oh, thank you, Lane. It's been so much fun, and I have to thank Doug for letting me know that you were available. So thank you, Doug, and thank you, Lane. And
okay.
We're going to take a break.
Okay. Shall I hang up?
Yep. That's it for now. But
okay.
We'll talk again soon. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll just ask Jill to hang on. We'll be right back.
Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Mother's Day is just around the corner. It's time to visit the Silver Queen, the premier location in the Tampa Bay area for gifts for all occasions. At the Silver Queen, you'll find the perfect gift for the queen in your life. From elegant earrings and jewelry bags to whatever mother loves. Beautiful photo frames that you won't find in the mall. So stop by the Silver Queen, located at 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. Is there a wedding in your future? Then the Silver Queen is the place to go. They have an amazing selection of engagement and wedding rings, and their bridal registry will ensure that you receive gifts that you will treasure for a lifetime. How about a birthday? You must check out their musical Silver Plate Birthday Cupcake. It is the kind of gift that will be used year after year. It's just $40. It is the perfect gift for a baby's first birthday. Check out their website, silverqueen.com. They have some wonderful coupons. Remember, the Silver Queen, 1350 West Bay Drive in Largo. It is the store with the beautiful dome.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Everybody wants cheap airfare, but where do you find it? You call Low Cost Airlines. Their prices are direct from the airlines, and they're so low you can't find these fares published anywhere. They specialize in cheap flights, discount hotel rooms, cheap car rental rates, and great package deals anywhere around the world. Wherever you want to go, they can help you get there cheaply and with a best price guarantee. If you want the lowest prices on your airline tickets or other travel services, call now. That's right, call. That's the only way to get these rates. Experts are standing by 24/7 to get you the cheapest airfare and hotel rates available. So don't wait. Call right now for the lowest travel prices anywhere and for great last-minute travel deals, too. Call right now. 800-648-9175. 800-648-9175. 800-648-9175. That's 800-648-9175.
We have a special guest on the line, Pete Rose. Pete, how you doing, buddy?
Rick, I'm doing all right. How you doing?
Good to talk to you. You know, Bill called me and told me you were coming on. So excited. I know you got the new thing on TLC.
Pete hits and misses. Exciting. We're having a lot of fun and going there and just talking sports with you.
Fires, Rose swings.
There it is. Get out.
Rocket Sports here on the Tantalk
Radio Network.
Join Rick Sassone in the Rocket Sports Show Fridays from noon to 2 p.m.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper with my in-studio guest, David Roy Ellis, who will answer your legal questions. I think, Big Ed, do we have somebody on the line? Can you put...
We have Jill on the line.
Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Do you have a question for Dave?
Yeah, I sure do. It's in regard to trademarks. I wrote a children's book, and most of the characters are animals. So I need to hire an illustrator. Now, if I tell her what kind of animal, what they look like a special hat or they carry a magical cane, do the characters belong to me? Or can she make a claim on them, even though I describe them?
Okay, Dave?
Yes. Well, what you want to do is if you've written the book, the text, and you want to hire a illustrator, then you need to have an agreement with the illustrator. And if you're going to be paying the illustrator, then you want to make sure that you own all the rights in her or his illustrations. So you would need to sign a contract. You would need to make sure that there's language in the contract which gives you all the rights. sometimes it's called a work for hire agreement or an assignment of the rights in the illustrations, but it all has to be down on paper. If you didn't have any written agreement, then the illustrator would really own the rights and probably just give you the right to use them for your book. Now, possibly if it's a well-known illustrator or she has a good negotiating position, the person might possibly want to negotiate for some rights to exhibit the finished drawings elsewhere or to sell prints. I mean, that's all negotiable. The point is that everything's negotiable, and then it should be reduced to writing. So you need to have a contract. You could write your own, but I would recommend you get a lawyer to do it.
I would second that, absolutely. Get a lawyer. Never write your own contract.
Yeah, but ultimately you'd have either some sort of work-for-hire arrangement, or sometimes you have collaborators. The person who writes the story and the person who does the illustrations can become co-authors, again, if they agree to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's a different way. Yeah, co-author. I don't know if that would be as good, would it?
Well, it's not to your advantage to do that normally, but again, it just depends. Every situation is different, and it just kind of depends on your relationship to the other person, to the illustrator, and whether you and he or she want to set it up as a collaboration, or you would just hire the person to do the work, and then you would own all of the work. You mentioned trademark. Actually, this is copyright. We're talking about ownership of the copyright in the finished book or finished work. Trademarks cover different issues. Sometimes, some characters occasionally can be trademarked, like Mickey Mouse is fairly well known. He's both a copyrighted character in the sense that he was originally introduced in 1928 by Disney in the film Steamboat Willie, and his copyright is still good. But Mickey Mouse is also a representative of the Disney people, so they use Mickey all kinds of places. So he also acts as a trademark for the Disney people.
Okay, so there is a difference between copyright and trademark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very, very much, very much so.
And so is there a particular type of a lawyer then that I would be working with?
Yeah, you would want a lawyer who knows copyrights. I mean, I'm an intellectual property lawyer, which covers things like copyrights and trademarks and patents and mm-hmm. and other issues like that. And that's the kind of person you'd want to review the whole situation with and draw a contract for you and advise you.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything to watch out for?
Is it what?
Anything to watch out for in language? Are there certain?
Yeah, there is some very specific language that you do need to include. If it's what we call a work made for hire, that's wording that's right in the Copyright Act, and there are some ins and outs. So I would not recommend you try to write your own contract. Now, what you can do is if you find somebody who you want to work with, you can discuss basically what you want and have some idea between the two of you of who will do what and the time frame and who owns what and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But ultimately you would want a lawyer to put it in a form that's legally enforceable. There's no point in having an agreement and then find out that you can't enforce it if one of you, well, if the other party violates it. So ultimately you want to have a lawyer take a look at it and either write it up or make sure the magic words are in there and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, so both of us should have a lawyer, isn't it? I mean, because if the other person didn't have a lawyer, they have a problem too, so you want both people to have a lawyer.
Well, if you want to protect your rights, it's good to have a lawyer. It also depends on the likely value, the kinds of big, if you're going to get a $100,000 advance like the agent before us was talking about, you're going to have a longer contract and you're going to both want lawyers and all the rest. If it's a smaller project, a first project, you're going to want to have something a little simpler because you're just not going to want to make a big investment in legal fees. But it's always good for both parties to have some legal advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jill, I think Dave's covered that question very well, because that's exactly what I would recommend too, that you need to have a lawyer whenever you're dealing in any project with a second person. You want things to be clear and concise, and so that you know where you stand, and that can save you a lot of time and money in the end, because You don't. You never want to have a lawsuit. Lawsuits are expensive, aren't they, Dave?
Oh yeah. It's just like you want to go to the doctor before you have the illness, not afterwards, because maybe you won't have the illness if you go to a doctor.
That's true. Well, thank you. I really appreciate this. I'm taking some notes here. And I'll listen
great.
Out to the rest of your...
Good luck with your book, and I hope that once you have it done, you'll come on my show here and talk about it.
Okay, I sure will. Thank you for your help.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Nice talking
Bye.
To you.
Nice talking to you.
Bye.
Bye now.
Great, Dave. Listen, I was telling you earlier before the show started that this past weekend I went to a writer's conference, and one of the questions that many people were asking were about fictitious names. Many writers, as a matter of fact, it was funny, I met one very, conference about a month ago in Tampa, I met a very elderly lady, and she's writing ever since a very famous book that starts with the name Shades, and no writer likes to mention it, but she was doing a lot of research, and she was writing a book that would be, I think, if she's headed that way, erotica. So she doesn't want to write it in her own name because I don't think she wants her grandchildren to know about it. But what is the rule with fictitious names? Is it from state to state? What is the rule here in Florida when you use a fictitious name? How do you go about doing that?
Okay. I guess what you call a fictitious name, I would call a pen name or a pseudonym.
Yeah.
Fictitious names you see more for businesses. If a business is ABC Corporation, it may do business under another name, and that name is what we call a fictitious name, and that usually gets registered with the Department of State in Tallahassee. Yeah. Pseudonyms or pen names don't really require any real legal registration. If you become well-known, it can actually become a trademark. If you're Samuel Clemens and you write under the name of Mark Twain and you sell a lot of stuff under the name Mark Twain, you can actually get a trademark on your name Mark Twain. A lot of actors or entertainers who don't use their real name, Judy Garland didn't use her real name, particularly in the old days, a lot of names were changed from foreign-sounding names to more generic type of names. So some of those get actually registered as trademarks for entertainment services or for writing. You can actually do that.
When you contact a publisher and you tell them you want to publish under your pen name, then are they obligated not to release your real name to people?
Again, a lot of it depends on a contract. Again, if you're going to be writing a book and having it published, that's the kind of thing that would probably go in the contract. You can include confidentiality clauses if it's agreeable. But yeah, when you file a copyright, by the way, you can file you can tell the copyright office who your real name is, or you can just leave it as a pseudonym.
Hey, Patsy, we have a caller, Kevin from Tarpon Springs.
Hi, Kevin. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. You have a question for Dave?
Yeah, I do. So I'm working with a couple of friends, and I'm writing, and they're going to film a short film. And I'm a little confused about, when you can and cannot use, the name of a company that's trademarked. If I wanted to talk about, let's say, Apple or something like that, is it necessary to, make up a name and, call it Orange or something like that? Or could I talk about it? Could I talk about Apple?
Yeah, you can talk about it. You can say he went into into McDonald's with his Apple computer. You certainly can say that. Those are well-known, famous trademarks. And if you try to make a computer called Apple or open a restaurant called McDonald's, you'd get sued for trademark infringement. But in the connection with a literary work, like a novel or a book or film, you can use those. That's what we could call fair use, because you're not really competing with them. You're not doing it for commercial purposes. You are just including it in as part of your book. So as long as you're not doing advertising or things like that in the course of the book, if it's just part of your book or part of your film, then it would be considered fair use. It would not be considered any kind of trademark or copyright infringement.
And that goes the same way for, like, logos? I've, like, seen on some,
logos, maybe
TV
not so. I mean,
like cover up.
Yeah.
They'll, like, cover up the logo.
You'd have to be a little more careful with logos, because if you had a film and you saw McDonald's in the background, if it was just in passing, a scene of a car driving down a street, you might see Burger King and McDonald's and Starbucks. But if you focus on it, or you put a big sign in an office, if it's an office scene and there's a big sign of Starbucks or something like that, you might have more of a problem. Again, if somebody's using an Apple computer, that's probably okay. But if you focus on the Apple logo, I would say logos are more the type of thing that I would avoid. But just mentioning it in the course of a conversation, that would probably be okay.
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 Did that answer your question?
Great. Yeah, he did. Thank you.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, if you or any of the other callers want a more specific information, I have an office here in Largo, actually, right here in Pinellas County. And so you give me a call or look me up. I'm on East Bay, and so I'm right smack in the middle of the county here.
And what is your website,
Dave? It's David Ellis Law. David Ellis, L-A-W, DavidEllisLaw.com is the website. 727-531-1111.
Okay, great.
And I have an email address on my web. You can find the email if you want to contact me by email.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Kevin, for calling in.
Okay.
Okay, have a nice day.
Bye.
Thanks. Okay. Now, thank you, Dave. It's been great to have you here, and I know that there are going to be more questions, legal questions, coming up over the next few months as I hear from more listeners. And perhaps you can come back and answer some more questions again.
Sure.
Now, during the next few months, I have many exciting interviews coming up. I will devote several programs to the Christian book industry, which is enormous. And I have some wonderful writers of Christian books, both children's and adult books, that are really wonderful. And in a few weeks, my guest will be Matthew Palmer, the author of Secrets of State. He's a 20-year veteran of the U.S. Foreign Service, and Mr. Palmer knows the exciting world of international intrigue. He was one of the designers of the program to identify conflict diamonds, and his new book is supposed to be very exciting. I haven't read it yet. I just got the advanced copy, and I'm really excited about it. This is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. Go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and go to my Facebook page, Patsy Gill, and like me. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So this week, get motivated. Take some time and write. One page at a time. In a month, you will have your first chapter. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Have a great week.